about.
Well, all right, let's eat. Dinner's on the table. Turkey time.
Let's strap on that feedback.
Looks like the turkey just showed up.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy.
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
The police, Sergeant Robin.
Hey, Sarge, this is the postmaster in Hillsdale.
Hey, he's gone.
Okay. You're not going to believe this, but I got a carrier that's being attacked by wild turkeys. Won't let him deliver the mail.
Where?
On Esplanade Drive, 28 Esplanade Drive.
28, okay, being attacked by turkeys.
This has been going on. It's crazy. I mean, they're actually attacking, biting. They chase the trucks, everything.
Wow.
Take a look at it.
All right, no problem. We'll send them over there.
And now.
We are less than a week away from the big Turkey Day.
That's right. Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, hey, no need to be politically correct. You could just say it the old-fashioned way. Happy Thanksgiving, Jesus.
Our feature presentation.
Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Monday morning, the 20th of November. Of Bovember? Is that what we said? No, November. Okay. Hey, your key card.
Yeah.
What? How?
It's...
But...
Because...
How?
When I...
Help me...
It decides...
I'm trying to process...
I can't...
Again, though.
There are times.
But again...
When...
How, though?
It...
You come every day.
Has a mind.
Right, but you...
Of its own.
How?
Kev Dog, eat dog.
Kev Dog.
Like, no joke, at least once a month, you can't find your key card that you use every day to get into the building.
I think that's generous. I think you saying once a month is generous.
How does it happen?
I have a system, Bean.
Uh-huh.
It's a good system.
And it's a good system. It works 100% of the time, unless I don't follow that system.
Mm-hmm.
So if I put my key card where I always put my key card, right, no issues. If I don't put it there, it could be any place in the continental United States. I have no idea.
Knowing that,
yes,
why don't you just put your key card where you put your key card?
Because the place that I put my key card has changed now. And so I just wander around the house like, like I'm not exactly sure what to do.
I just...
It's
Chip,
a,
Chip has...
It's just, it's a thing where it does its thing.
Have you ever had to send somebody out to let Ralph in, Chip?
No.
How about Dave?
No.
I mean, I think that... I mean,
Christine.
I think we all get where you're going at.
Omar.
Yeah.
Nope.
Beer mug.
Nope.
Right.
Not even beer mug?
Maybe like once.
I was going to say, beer mug system is working better than Kevin's system. That's when you know you got a problem.
By the way, maybe like once is way better than my system as well. Yeah.
It's just, it's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not ideal if that's what you're saying.
All right. I'm just glad you know the phone number to call in. Otherwise, you'd just be standing out there waiting for the next person to show up.
Yeah, I did. I called in, and then I said, hey, could you send Ruben out? And nothing. So I just waited and waited until somebody else came in, and then I just followed them in. So that's how that works.
Just Kev Dog being Kev Dog.
Yeah.
I like it.
Kev Dog, eat dog.
Kev Dog.
We've got a lot of show to get to today, and we will shortly. I saw an interesting article that was published earlier in the week, or I should say now that it's Monday, late last week. And I don't know if Charles Manson being ill is why this article was published, but I thought it was appropriate to look at since Charles Manson has finally passed away at the age of 83.
Right.
By the way, fun fact, many people on Twitter, having no idea who Charles Manson is or was, were very sad to hear that Marilyn Manson had died.
Oh,
there was
no.
There were a lot of R.I.P. Mansons, and I loved beautiful people, and he gave me permission to be weird and just all sorts of stuff, all sorts of sympathy out there for the loss of the great Marilyn Manson, not knowing who Charles Manson was, which I thought was pretty funny. But this article came out a few days ago from Mental Floss that I was fascinated with. And take it with a grain of salt, because just because you're on this list in no way means that you're a psychopath. But according to science, there are 6 totally normal behaviors that might mean you're a psychopath. And by this, I mean, you know, a lot of times you'll hear when somebody goes on a shooting spree or somebody turns out to be a serial killer or something like that, they look back in their past and they find bad things that they've done before.
Right.
They, you know, domestic abuse or animal abuse or something like that. Well, these are not like that. These are normal things that all of us do, but put them all together and a surprising number of psychopaths end up being these people. For instance, you studied business.
What?
You wouldn't think you'd studied business would be any kind of a thing. But they say that people who are psychopaths are more likely to study business than almost any other field. The desire for power, status, and money characterizes these what are called dark triad individuals. In other words, you go into the business world, and they're saying it doesn't make, you know, good people bad, but it does say that unscrupulous people tend to go into business. All right. Number two, and this is weird. I've never heard this before.
They drink water.
You don't catch yawns.
You don't catch yawns.
That's a common trait among psychopaths.
Meaning somebody else yawns and then I look at it and it doesn't happen to me?
Right. And that, because do you know anybody like that?
No.
Don't we all catch yawns?
Well, I think so, yeah.
Being a psychopath is often linked to a lack of empathy for other people. One of the theories for contagious yawning is that it's an empathy response. It's also found in many animal species. However, psychopaths do not catch yawns.
Wait, it's an empathy thing?
Yes.
So I feel bad that you're tired and yawning, so...
Not necessarily that you feel bad, just that you respond to it. You recognize it and acknowledge it and realize that you and that person are similar because you're both going through
and
the same
thing. And this is from Dumbass Magazine, or where was it?
They're all different studies. This was a 2015 study at the University of Texas. They all came from different studies, but they put them together in one article to look for links that are non-creepy links about psychopaths. You're a night owl, for instance. Millions of people are night owls. They're saying that's one that you do find in psychopaths.
Mm.
Here's one, Kevin, that should concern you.
All right.
You should be refiguring your life here. You love M&M.
What?
You love M&M. According to a study from New York University, people with higher degrees of psychopathy tend to prefer songs from M&M over other pop songs. They're saying, you know, the results are not exactly rock-hard evidence, but the findings were significant enough that they are conducting a larger investigation between musical tastes and psychopathic traits.
That's bullshit.
Look, again, not all of these are going to apply to all psychopaths. But here's a question I have for you. Do you think that there are any psychopaths who are listening to Love Songs on the Coast, for instance? I mean, could we rule out those people? The people who are into Celine Dion records don't go on and kill a bunch of people.
I mean, that sounds sound, but I who knows?
That's why they're doing studies on this.
Yeah.
All right, here's one that I think applies to most people who have any kind of success. You are creative. A desire to break the rules doesn't always result in a desire to break the law. But they're saying that there are certain this is a study in the Philippines found that certain traits associated with psychopathy, especially boldness, were linked with scores on a divergent thinking test, a common psychological method for measuring creativity. Being a risk taker helps you think more creatively, and some people might come up with nefarious uses for that. And here's another weird one. This is the final one on the list. Psychopaths are known for cold calculation and manipulation, and that trait may lead them to stay friends with their exes long after the relationship ends. This is a study just this year from Oakland University. They found that in a study of more than 800 people, people with psychopathic traits tend to keep their exes in their lives. They want to keep the ability to hook up with them again or know that they have money. Narcissists hate to fail or lose, so they do whatever they can to maintain some connection, even if they didn't make a choice to end it, according to a narcissism expert. So again, if you're one or several of these things, it doesn't mean you're a psychopath, but these are scientists.
That sounds like the weakest story ever.
Mm-hmm.
A scientist here, scientist there, piecemealing it together.
Well,
if you drink 3/4 of a glass of milk, you could be a psychopath.
They are trying to look for some clues, some connections between these people who go on to do awful things like Charles Manson did. You don't catch yawns, though. I'm going to keep my eyes peeled because I don't think I've ever known anyone who could avoid that.
So then if they don't, what do? Citizen's arrest?
Yeah. Take them down, man. Knock them right to the floor.
All right. Let's talk about today's Kevin DeBeach show, shall we?
I just had you pegged as a dumb douchebag loser and
You're just one of those things.
Harvey Levin from TMZ, like we do on Mondays. We also have Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network to recap this week's action. We have Tim Meadows from Saturday Night Live.
Love Tim.
Same. We want to talk to people who died and came back to life. It's funny because when we started this job, we started, you know, asking for phone calls from people who have experienced one thing or another. And we found nothing that we can throw out there where no one will call.
Mm-hmm.
You died and came back to life. I feel like we get a lot. We've done this, how long, 3 years, 4 years ago?
3 or 4 years ago since we've done it. But we had plenty of people who crossed over for some period of time after an accident or a surgery or something like that. And I'm actually excited to do this topic today because I don't remember if there was some sort of consensus as to what they saw or remembered.
That's my favorite thing is that we did it 2 or 3 years ago and neither of us have any idea how it went. We'll take a break. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 5:53.
Kevin and Bean listener Edwin, God bless him, right?
Oh my goodness.
He has all the best ideas. He writes in and says, can Melissa, Kevin's wife, please add a division to Friends and Helpers that will just buy more key cards for Kevin? I envision a big barrel full of key cards that we can put next to his front door. That way he can grab a different one every day as he walks out the door.
Great idea.
Or maybe I can adopt a Christmas stocking full of key cards for Kevin. I can already hear the jingle. 1-800-CARDS-FOR-KEVIN. Donate your cards today.
Be a whole new charity.
I think we're in business.
Cards for dummies.
Hey, it's Monday morning. That's the voice of our friend Ralph Garman coming in after yet another Eagles win. Probably feeling pretty good this morning, Ralph.
The Eagles won?
Huh.
I should have watched that game.
Interesting you wouldn't have paid attention to
that. So that would be awesome if they beat the Cowboys by, 30 points. That would have been awesome.
It's not extra special when it's Dallas, right?
Oh, so great. Except NBC let me down again because it's not over until I see Jerry Jones's sad face. Until I see his big hangdog, just plastic surgery riddled face, just make that grr face and then storm out of his luxury suite. That's the best part of a loss when it's Dallas.
For a billionaire, Jerry Jones is having a miserable life lately, isn't he?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Everybody in the NFL hates him, from the other owners to
the fans. I'm going to get you, Roger Goodell. It's like Boss Hogg.
And losing a game like last night has to make him very, very sad. I flew over AT&T Stadium on Saturday, by the way.
In a jetpack?
No, I was on an airplane. Yeah. That place, not a bulletin here, is huge.
Good take.
It's a big-ass stadium.
It's a big stadium. Large.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Jerry World is big, you're saying.
But Jerry is still sad, and that's all that matters. All right, it's 5:55. Time for our first look at the Showbiz Beat. What's going on?
Well, big weekend, of course, in the movie theaters on Mondays. We take a look to see what people went to see over the weekend. Justice League came in at number one with $96 million, which was considered a very weak opening. That's the showbiz world we live in.
Sounds crazy to me.
Where $96 million considered a disappointment. It was 44% lower than Batman v Superman opened, when you think about it that way. But, a lot of disappointed people involved with this project, expecting a much bigger opening weekend, considering the film cost $300 million to make.
Wow.
They were hoping for a blockbuster opening weekend, and they didn't break the $100 million mark, to their disappointment. Wonder debuted with $27 million. That was pretty good. Made it number two. Thor Ragnarok was third. Daddy's Home 2. Murder on the Orient Express came in at number five. The Star debuted with $10 million at six. Kids got to see something. Bad Moms Christmas. Lady Bird. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri came in at number nine. And Jigsaw rounding out your top ten at the box office this weekend. I heard about it this weekend, but it's happening today at 11:30 a.m. Oh, I might have to go. I might have to go down there. Nick Nolte get his star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Nick Nolte! I just want to hear the speech.
Same.
I want to thank everybody who came out here today because they got a star in the Walk of Fame.
Be the best. He is currently starring in a show on Epix called Graves, where he plays an ex-president named Richard Graves who no longer has to give an F and starts telling people how he really feels. And I've seen a couple episodes. It's pretty entertaining. But, of course, the enormous movie star back in the day, you forget how big a star he was. He was white hot.
I just remember he was going through some real hard times where he was caught eating dog food out of a bowl on the floor one time, remember? I mean, it just seemed like, how do you come back from that and get to the point where you're getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame? It's impressive.
For the most of you who don't get the reference, that's from a movie called Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
Oh, that was just a... Oh, I'm sorry.
He played a homeless guy in Beverly Hills, and Richard Dreyfuss played a rich guy. Took him in. It was just a movie.
Because being misunderstood, the difference between a movie and reality.
I remember when Nick Nolte was a police officer, and he had to release a African-American convict from prison and partner up with him to catch an even worse guy.
I think that was 48 hours.
What? He was not an actual police officer?
But he did have one of the five greatest mugshots of all time.
That
is true. We could all agree on that.
For real.
Right?
What about when he was a decorated soldier, but then it turned out he was just a garbage man for the Coast Guard?
That was Thunder, Tropic Thunder. Tropic Thunder.
Everybody keeps talking about my movies.
And Liam Neeson, poor Liam Neeson. He is he's all beat up. He's been one of the toughest action stars in Hollywood, but his body is paying the price at 65 years old. He's got a shoulder surgery this week he has to undergo because it's all banged up, and they're going to make it all better for him. So he's going to be in recovery for a couple months, but we wish him the best as he goes under the knife this week.
I don't know who you are.
You know? Just a guy wishing you well. Today's celebrity birthday is our buddy Joel McHale. Celebrates his 46th birthday today. Lead singer for Dream Car, a little band called AFI, too. Davey Havoc is 42. Future, the rapper, is 34. And Ming-Na Wen. We love her
so much.
Of course, from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and ER and Mulan. She's 54 years old today. That's not possible.
What? No,
she's not humanly possible. She made a deal with the devil.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Got tickets for Ducks versus Jets at Honda Center this Friday to give away on this morning's Kevin and Bean Show. By the way, Kevin, not now. We got Harvey on the phone. But later, I want to hear about Chip going behind enemy lines and attending a Kings game this weekend.
She did that actually for the charity, which I thought was very cool.
Which is very cool of her to go out and help you and your wife raise, you know, get some food together for the holidays for your people. But I just think it's so funny to think about her being behind enemy lines.
Yeah.
And just tried to play it cool, you know?
I mean, I feel bad for having her beat up, but
exactly.
It needed to be done.
Hey, speaking of Harvey, that's our friend Mr. Levin, who is back on the phone, as he is every Monday at this time, from TMZ.com. Hey, Harvey.
Good morning, guys.
We laughed a little bit about all the people online who thought Marilyn Manson died because they are too young to know who Charles Manson was.
I did not know that. Oh, my God. Is that true?
People were tweeting things like, oh, Marilyn Manson, he gave me permission to be weird. And, oh, I love that Beautiful People song.
Oh,
you should look into that. I think that's a funny sidebar.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, Charles Manson is where Marilyn Manson took his name. But for people who aren't old enough, this is a big this is a major figure of the 20th century for all the wrong reasons.
It's even bigger than that. It was a seismic event in Los Angeles and really the country. I mean, this was a cult that was trying to start a race war that terrorized Los Angeles. That it wasn't just the Tate murders, but followed up a day later by the LaBianca murders, mm-hmm. where Los Angeles was unsafe. And it was an enormous, enormous deal. So Manson died last night at 8:13. It's interesting. We broke this story, and the way we broke it was we spoke to Sharon Tate's sister, Deborah Tate, and she had just gotten a call from the prison informing her that Manson had died. And it's interesting because they told her that they were calling all of the victims' families before they released anything publicly. I have not heard of them doing anything like that before. It seems appropriate because of the nature of this whole thing.
Right.
But they were methodically calling everybody down the list.
Now, here's one of the things that I was thinking about, and this shows you how much has changed in the decades since these murders took place in 1969, and that is we live in a world now, Harvey, where we wake up every other week and some madman with a gun has gone out there and killed 20 people, 40 people, 60 people. This was, you know, by body count, it was a relatively small number, but it was still so shocking because of the psychological way in which he brainwashed these people to go out and do his bidding. I mean, he was, as has been said for all these years, the living embodiment of evil in a person.
Well, absolutely. And there are really two things going on. One is what you just said, which is the way he brainwashed these people. But we didn't know about that when the murders occurred because nobody knew who did it. But what we did know was there was somebody out there that was carving up people, you know, pregnant women, you know, putting blood in the walls, saying death to the pigs, starting what they wanted, what appeared to be a race war, which is what they wanted. And, you know, that was terrifying. So it wasn't just body count. It was the nature of the crime. And that in itself, you know, really made this different from other crimes.
There were 169 stab wounds, which is crazy, and 7 gunshot wounds. So it was not
Yeah, no, it was, you know, that was a murder to, there were murders to make a statement, a political statement. And remember, this is at a, you know, a difficult time in the country. The Vietnam War was raging. And, you know, I will tell you something interesting. And you guys may know this or not, but my understanding, you know, and I've read a million things on Charles Manson and, you know, covered it, you know, in various stages when I was a reporter. But I don't think Sharon Tate was the intended victim of this. The person who lived in that house before Sharon Tate, just weeks before, was a guy named Terry Melcher, who was Doris Day's son. And Terry Melcher actually was dating Candace Bergen, and the two of them lived in that home. The reason that's interesting is because Charles Manson had recorded, had written a Beach Boys song, and the Beach Boys actually recorded it and put it on a single. It was the B-side to a single. So Manson felt that he was going to be a famous songwriter, and he became, you know, it became so apparent how crazy he was that everybody, the Beach Boys and Terry Melcher, who was the producer for the Beach Boys, cut him loose, and Manson flew into a rage, and the thinking was that Manson sent the, you know, his troops over to that house.
Interesting.
Not to kill Sharon Tate, but to get Terry Melcher, and they just didn't know the difference.
So wrong person, wrong time.
Awful.
Wow.
Did you watch any of the Dave Duchovny two-season series that they just did called Aquarius on NBC about the Manson murders? Did you see any of that, Harvey?
I didn't, no.
It was really good.
There's a book called Tate Manson, and it's, geez, you know, there are so many books that are amazing about this. I mean, Vincent Bugliosi's book is fantastic, Helter Skelter. But there's this book, Tate Manson, which is the kind of collision between the two of them. And it's just unbelievable. If anybody's interested, it's a great book.
I got to tell you, the thing that struck me last night was this is one of the first times in a long time. Because people die and you go, man, what a bummer. Man, what a bummer. It's the first time I can remember going, all right. I'm fine with this. This is good. It's actually helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine anybody saying, oh, how sorry. He was a monster.
Right. We don't need him. We don't need him. All right, let me ask you one more quick Manson question, then we got to move on to another story, and that is, do I remember correctly, or am I fuzzy on this, that Manson is one of those prisoners who developed a cult following as a prisoner, and somebody ended up marrying him while he was in jail?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember marrying, but you know this happens all the time. It happened to the Menendez brothers. It happened to
Richard Ramirez.
It happens to pretty much, you know, anybody who's notorious.
We have listeners right now who are good guys with jobs who can't get a date, and somebody hooked up with Charles Manson while he was in prison.
Yeah, but those guys don't want the girls that are hooking up with Charles Manson.
Exactly. I was just about to say that.
All right. Let's move on to something else. And this is a fascinating story at TMZ.com about Sylvester Stallone and the charges that have been brought against him, because so often in these cases we go, well, it's he said, she said, and we tend to believe the woman who comes forward with a sexual assault charge, but there's no way to know because there's never any corroborating witness. You've got a different spin on this Sylvester Stallone story than I've seen before.
Well, yeah, I mean, I want to talk about that, and then I'd like to talk generally about what you just said, because I think what you said is really important. So Sylvester Stallone is being accused of sexually assaulting a 16-year-old girl. Now, when I say accused, it's kind of vague because there is what looks like a police report that surfaced that was written in 1986 that says this 16-year-old girl was sexually assaulted at the Las Vegas Hilton when Sylvester Stallone was there shooting over the top. And this is, you know, again, 1986. The police have no record of this police report. It surfaced in the Daily Mail, and it's very lurid and explains what supposedly happened to this girl. Now, she says she didn't want to press charges, and Sylvester was never contacted, and the police have no record of this. So Bridget Nielsen was married to Sylvester Stallone in 1986, and she was in Las Vegas the whole time he was there shooting the movie. She contacted us through her, through a lawyer, and she says it's an absolute lie. She was there the entire time, she says. She says that they had just gotten married months before. She was with him the whole time. There was no way at 8:30 at night in that hotel room that this happened, because she was with him, and she says it's an absolute lie. Now, on top of that, there's a guy named David Mendelsohn, who was the child actor who co-starred with Stallone in Over the Top. And according to the police report, this 16-year-old girl met Stallone through David Mendelsohn. He says that's absolutely not true. He says that the only people he introduced Sylvester to were his relatives. So he says she is that could not be the case. He didn't do it. And Bridget, who has not spoken to Stallone in 30 years, just came forward and says, right is right, wrong is wrong. It didn't happen.
How about that? Why couldn't Bridget Nielsen, when she was married to Sylvester Stallone, talk him out of doing the arm wrestling movie Over the Top, though?
Right? What's the statute of limitations on prosecuting him for that movie?
Okay, that's funny.
All right, you wanted to make one final comment about the he said, she said, Harvey.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are clearly a lot of people coming forward who are telling the truth. But that doesn't mean everybody is. And the danger in all of this is that, you know, somebody says something and it automatically gets it gets splattered all over the media, and there's no vetting, there's no should we check this out. Somebody makes a claim, it's put up. And if you look at what's going on, that is the drill right now. Everybody's just putting it up.
Right.
And there should be a caution to that, that there clearly are a lot of people. I don't know the percentage, but a lot of people clearly telling the truth.
Absolutely.
Again, does not mean everybody is, and every time somebody makes a claim, you can't just make an assumption. It's got to be true.
I agree.
It's a very dangerous thing to do that.
I agree. But in some of these cases, though, whether it's Harvey Weinstein or Roy Moore, when you see multiple people coming up, then it starts to look more like a pattern, like not everybody is coming out and lying.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard to be a couch potato judge where you say, oh, this one's got to be true and that one's – it's like you got to do vetting. I mean, you know, that's one of the reasons when they have cases, it takes time to, you know, evaluate the credibility of everybody and know this. And all that's getting short-circuited right now, and it's a dangerous situation.
I'm glad we've got a journalist there in the newsroom, Harvey. I appreciate your comments on that. TMZ.com for these stories and more. TMZ airing throughout the day on Fox Channel 11. TMZ live at 4 p.m. And, of course, TMZ Sports Monday through Friday at midnight on Fox Sports 1. Have yourself a great week. We'll do it again next Monday. Thank you.
Okay, guys.
A lot of listeners, by the way, starting to freak out as we get closer and closer to the sold-out K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas 2017, because they got to be there to see Morrissey and the Killers and Weezer and Muse and 30 Seconds to Mars and Queens of the Stone Age and all the rest. It's going to be amazing. I just want to give you a heads up, if you don't think about this, is there are more ways to win than just calling in. We also give you options at krock.com. You can enter to win tickets to either night. So you might want to check that out. And we'll have more to give away on the air coming up soon, too.
Let's talk about the three UCLA basketball players that were caught shoplifting in China.
First of all, dumbasses.
Right? Second of all, dumbasses.
Dumbasses, right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was, and I think we mentioned this briefly on Friday. This is LiAngelo Ball, Cody Riley, and Jalen Hill. I was a little bit impressed, and I know I shouldn't be because it's the right thing to do, that they came out and took responsibility for their actions and apologized to everybody in the world that they let down, because so often you see, well, it wasn't that big a deal, or well, it wasn't my fault, or well, you know, blah, blah, blah. They make some sort of excuse. But they really did kind of take it like men, which I was impressed with.
Yeah, it sort of felt to me like they were reading a press release.
Well, it's also possible that a grown-up said, this is what you're going to say, and shut up. But they did. There is some fallout from, well, let's play a little bit of the apology from a couple of the players from the press conference, and then we'll tell you what LeVar Ball had to weigh in about afterwards.
I know that this goes beyond me letting my school down, but I let the entire country down. Before I thank everybody who worked so incredibly hard to help us return home safely, I want to thank the Chinese police and the government for taking care of us and treating us well during our time there.
I would also like to thank President Trump and the United States government for the help that they provided as well. I'm grateful to be back home, and I'll never make a mistake like this again.
Let me know how much you want me to keep playing.
That's fine. Okay. By the way, he'll never make a mistake like that again. All right. So LeVar Ball, the big baller, who, as you know, never shuts up about anything ever, he's being interviewed about this, and he was asked, hey, how about the president, you know, hooking up your kid? How about the president calling in a favor to China and getting these boys released? And he's like, what was he over there for? Don't tell me nothing. Everybody want to makes it seem like he helped me out, which really seems like a crappy thing to do. How about thanking the president for intervening, which he didn't have to do, which he should have done, but he certainly didn't have to do it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
President not taking that very well. Let's get him on the phone, shall we? He is furious and further tweeted that maybe he should have left those guys in jail if he wasn't going to get the kind of thanks he wanted from the family. And that's rubbing a lot of people the wrong way, too. So let's sort the whole thing out with number 45 back on the phone here on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Hey, Mr. President.
Yes, it's me, your favorite president. I'm back, okay?
Well, that's enough.
Your favorite president is here, and I'm so glad that you invited your favorite president to be on the radio show.
You did also tweet about the election in Arizona that you are everyone's favorite president.
I am. A lot of people are saying I'm the favorite president.
Well, you're the only president for right now, so we can agree
ever.
On that.
Only president ever, in my opinion.
I mean, you're the best one ever.
The only thing that we can count on with politics is that there's a decent amount of people who are going to hate the president no matter who it is. I'm
the favorite president.
Okay.
I am your favorite president.
You are the best.
Unbelievably popular.
Right. You're the best president currently in office, but you do have the lowest approval rating of any president in modern
times.
But
I'm your favorite president is what I'm saying.
Well, you're the only.
Your.
Okay. So. Here's what you tweeted
you
after.
Love me.
Don't really, but okay.
Everybody loves me, and if you don't love me, you should be in jail. That's the way I see it.
Wow.
Well, again, when LeVar Ball came out and said that everybody wanted to make it seem like he helped me out, you tweeted that maybe you should have left the boys in jail.
Not maybe. I said I should have left them in jail.
Okay.
I didn't say maybe.
You're right. You said I should have left
three young Americans in jail because their father doesn't love me enough. That's what I said. I'm the president, and I said that.
That's pretty true.
You are, and you did.
Just bugging anybody. I'm your favorite.
You should have left American citizens in a communist jail because
they don't love me enough.
Their dad, right?
Right. Dad doesn't love me enough.
Yeah.
Volleyball does not love me as much as he should.
LeVar Ball. His name's LeVar Ball.
LeVolleyball does not love me. His son, Bocce, doesn't love me. His other little son, Ski, does not love me. Okay, none of the balls love me enough.
All the names
the
wrong,
other
Mr.
two, Baba O'Reilly, Benny Hill, the other basketball players, all love to me must be given. Okay.
I think the point is you don't make decisions about what to do as the president based on how much praise you get from the family members of the people involved.
Really?
Yes,
do you know
really.
Me at all? Do you know me at all? Are you familiar with Donald Trump?
Yes,
even
because
a little bit?
You're Bean's favorite president.
Right,
is what I heard.
I'm your favorite president. You should know that's how I make all my judgment calls. Who loves me most? That's all I have to worry about. And Bean, you love me most. I am your favorite president.
Well, now we know.
President, favorite, you love
right.
me.
No.
Mwah. Okay. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 6:53.
We are going to be looking for you if you have died and come back to life. Now, let me clarify. If you've died and you did not come back to life, we are not going to need to hear
call.
From you.
Don't call.
Right. But if you've died and come back to life, there's a story in the news where that happened to a young man, and it turned out the last time we did this topic a few years ago, it has happened to several of our listeners, too, and it is a fascinating topic.
This weekend, I saw that Superman died, and then they brought him back to life.
But he's Kryptonian. He doesn't count. We want to talk to humans.
Humans only. Okay.
Humans only.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So that'll be coming up right after the
By the way, spoilers.
Oh, sorry.
Jeez, yeah, thanks,
Kevin.
Dick. First, though, wrap us here with another look at the Showbiz Beat here on a Monday morning. What's new? What's going on?
Speaking of, the Justice League debuted this weekend at number one at the box office with a take of $96 million. Loser. Apparently, people are saying that's a weak opening week.
Well, it's not Marvel-esque, I'll tell you that.
Justice League. It's not even Batman v Superman, which made $166 million in its opening weekend.
Wow, big
This is 44% lower. And considering the movie cost $300 million to make, then another, I don't know, 100 to promote, they got a steep climb to get their money back.
Yeah.
Wait and see.
Has it opened around the world, too, or just here so far?
I believe it opened around the world as well. I don't know what the international take is. Probably do pretty well.
People aren't loving it either, which doesn't help.
No. And you know what a comic book fan I am. I have, I couldn't find time in my weekend to go. You'd think I would have carved out a couple hours.
Yeah.
But I'm just, I want to see it, but I'm not dying to see it. Mm-hmm. I will see it, but I'm not like, oh, opening day kind of seeing it kind of thing.
Bet you somebody gets fired over that.
Right? Wonder debuted with $27 million. Thor Ragnarok was third. Daddy's Home 2 came in at number 4. Murder on the Orient Express was number 5 at the box office. The Star debuted at number 6. A Bad Mom's Christmas, Lady Bird, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and Jigsaw were your top 10 films at the box office this weekend. Nick Nolte's getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame this morning at 11:30 a.m. Of course, a ton of movies in his lengthy career. He's got Oscar and Golden Globe nominations for his roles in Warrior and Affliction and Prince of Tides, and many, many other memorable roles. I remember The Deep. Remember The Deep? That was a good one.
The Deep, no?
Yeah, where he's what do you call it? A scavenger, I guess, who goes down and reclaims stuff from shipwrecks and stuff.
Oh, looking for treasure.
Yeah. Treasure Hunter. Hmm. Good film. He's also got his new autobiography called Rebel, which is being published and will be out in January. So, congratulations to Nick Nolte.
That should be a hell of a speech. It should be hard to listen to when he's ironed on the microphone thanking everybody who made it all possible for him.
He's got a beautiful voice.
It's melodic. Harrison Ford, saving lives. Kevin, I know you hate it when celebrities save lives.
I don't.
You do. You want people to die, and you don't want celebrities to lift a finger to help them.
That is not
That's
true,
That's always what you've said.
Not I have true. Heard you say on many occasions, if somebody is choking or in a car wreck and a celebrity is nearby, he should watch and just enjoy that person dying.
No, it's just publicity. It's just for publicity. Not even no care about several lives of three people's.
I've heard him say many times. That's right. Well, Harrison Ford saw a car veer off the Santa Paula Freeway in Santa Paula, California, and run into some trees and fencing. And what did he do? Boom! Johnny on the spot. Pulled over, jumped out, and helped the driver of the vehicle.
How many people is that now that he's saved? Like 15?
Yes.
16?
I think so.
But he's needed saving more than he has saved, turns out. He usually crashes more vehicles and cars and planes than he helps people who have crashed.
True. Imagine how bizarre that would be if you're that driver and freaking Indiana Jones shows up to help you.
You gotta feel pretty good. You're in pretty good hands. Things usually go right when he's around.
Right.
The driver was transported to a Santa Paula hospital with minor injuries. Apparently he's going to be okay.
I wish Harrison Ford would have said to the guy, don't ever tell anybody this. And then the guy would, he'd never admit
handed him a silver bullet and then took off.
But then the guy goes around the rest of his life trying to convince people that it was Harrison Ford who saved him. And Harrison Ford completely, never says a word about it. The guy, everybody just thinks the guy's crazy.
What kind of weird games you play with people's lives? The guy was in a car accident.
He's already in an accident.
He doesn't need the bonus pressure of Harrison Ford playing mind games with him.
I just think it would be hilarious for him the rest of his life. It really happened to him, but nobody ever believes him.
That would be...
It would be super funny.
If he did say that to him, there's no way the guy would hear it.
That's true. Oh, that's true.
And when he's going to say, here he goes,
What? I can't.
I'm saying don't believe
Today's celebrity birthday is Ming-Na Wen. The lovely, the talented. She's just a sweetheart. Been on the show a bunch of times, and she could not be sweeter. 54 years old today, which is just physically impossible.
Yeah.
I don't know what
it's not cool.
Deal with the devil she made, but it's going to be hell to pay. Joel McHale's 46. Davey Havok
Cry havoc! And let slip the dogs of war!
42 years old today. AFI and Dream Car singer, of course. And Future, the rapper, is 34 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Andrew Siciliano recaps the weekend that was in the NFL, coming up at 8 like we do on Monday mornings here on the Kevin Bean Show. Thanks so much for tuning in. I did some flying this weekend, Kevin, a couple of cross-country flights, and that gives me the opportunity to burrow in with a good book. And you'll be happy to know that I read the new Gordon Lightfoot biography and enjoyed it very much. And at one point, Gordon has an he's a singer. Playing the wreck. Nothing to do with the wreck of the Evan Fitzgerald.
What?
Although I did learn some fun facts about that song I'll share on another program. At one point, he's driving on his way to a concert, and he has an aortic embolism, or aneurysm, excuse me, an aortic embolism in his abdomen. That's a lot of A words.
Yeah.
And he just makes it to the hospital, and they wheel him in, and he dies on the table. And remarkably,
so this is a good news story.
No, he's still alive and going well at 79. But remarkably, as so often happens, thanks to the genius and hard work of medical professionals, they are able to bring him to life. Now, they did not get into in the book if he saw or felt anything in the time that he was dead. By the way, he was after that in a coma for 6.5 weeks. So the mind is a crazy place, what it goes through. But I saw that and I thought, what a coincidence that we're going to be doing this phone topic on Monday's Kevin and Bean Show about people who die and come back to life, because it happens, I don't want to say all the time.
All the time.
It has happened to thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And it's in the news again from this month. It happened to somebody where he died and came back to life. And I think that is I don't want to test it, but I think it's fascinating for the people who have lived through it. What's this dude's deal?
This dude's an MMA fighter, and apparently he was knocked dead. And then they brought him back. I mean, that's insanity, right? Just the idea that the guy's dead, and then, okay, stand up, let's go. All good.
Paramedic, his name is CJ Hancock, by the way. He's in an organization called the Legacy Fighting Alliance. This is not a UFC fighter, but yeah, he is in the ring / octagon. Paramedics were able to revive him following CPR and a couple of jolts from the defibrillator. Then he was rushed to the hospital for a stopped heart and kidney failure, but now he is feeling much better. A good friend told me it was a miracle coming back from death, and that even though we may not know why yet, there is a reason. So he thanks the people that were there to save his life. If you look online and search for people who have died and come back to life, I'm fascinated with this. And by the way, we want to take your calls on this. If you're one of the lucky people who is alive today after being dead at some point in your life, we want to hear from you at 1-800-520-1067. Please call and please share your story. Because I am curious if the reason that so many people come back after death with very similar sounding stories is because that's how it is and that's what they really saw and felt. Or is it just kind of the collective assumption that that's what it's like, and people say it because they've heard other people say it?
Or they've seen it in TV and movies.
Yeah.
And
just like aliens, for instance. People overwhelmingly describe aliens as looking the way they look on The X-Files.
Yeah,
and the way they've looked in science fiction movies throughout the years. Now, that's not – maybe it's possible that that's really what the aliens look like, but I wonder how much of it is that's what people expect to see, so that's what they see. So lots of people who die come back and tell stories of lights, for instance, you know, that they see lights.
Yeah.
And I also was thinking, and I wonder.
But I want more than just I saw lights, right?
But especially if you're in a hospital and you're in and out of consciousness or whatever, I feel like you're kind of looking up at the ceiling where there are bright lights. So it kind of makes sense to me that there would be some flashes of light.
The positioning of the lights is perfect for you to see them?
Well, yeah, because they're directly above your head when you're on an operating room table, for instance. I'm just wondering where these lights are coming from. Let me give you one example. And again, we're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Here's a guy who says, what I remember is vast nothingness. It's hard to describe as we're always being surrounded by something wherever we go. Suddenly in this vast nothing was a blinding pinprick of light that got larger. Either I was moving toward it or it was moving towards me. As it got closer, what appeared to be a single light resolved into first one and then several and then millions upon millions of stars of all shapes, sizes, and colors, along with tons of nebulae. Now, there are a lot of people, if you start researching this online, who will describe a similar thing, that it looks like they're going into a star field.
Okay.
And, again, does that mean that's what happens? Or is this just a common wisdom on this? It was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. This person who died and came back to life goes on. As I approached the center, it seemed like I was joining a universal consciousness, a being made up of thoughts, emotions, and experiences of everyone and everything that had ever lived. So he went pretty deep into this.
Remember that time that little girl went into a TV and then there was that tiny little woman and she's like, don't go to the light!
Poltergeist.
And then they said, go to the light! And then another person said, don't go to the light!
It's actually, that's a movie.
Oh.
That's a movie.
Okay.
So that is that's a very common description of what happens when people die. And I've not seen anybody, and by the way, God bless our listeners because look at all the phones lighting up.
Yep.
I've never heard anybody say, and maybe that'll change today when we start taking calls here, that it was awful on the other side. The only two things I've ever heard are there was nothing or it was incredibly peaceful. I've never heard anybody say it was awful. Like, it doesn't seem like you're going right, you know, you step into hell the minute you die.
I feel like the problem, if I were to pass away, is there would be nothing. Because, you know, because there's nothing there now. So what would there be?
I almost died from drowning last year, and the experience changed me. I had been dead for an unknown amount of minutes, but they managed to pull me out of the water and revive me. I do not know how long I was dead. They say it took 2 minutes to revive me on the beach. Listen to this. Basically, all I saw was blackness, followed by many lights, lights becoming stars, stars turning into something I cannot describe. I mean, these are people who don't know each other who are telling the same story. So let's find out what's up with our listeners at 1-800-520-1067. Why don't we start with, let's start with Jennifer. She's in Sherman Oaks. She didn't die, but she is a nurse at a hospital critical care unit, and she says this happens a lot, and I'm fascinated by that. Jennifer, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
So when you say it happens a lot, what do you mean?
Like, well, from where I work, we encounter it from people that, I mean, could be dog, or even at Universal Studios where all of a sudden their heart stops.
Right.
And then we do CPR. Well, the paramedics come, or even a bystander does CPR, and then we're able to revive them, and then we do something where it's called targeted temperature management, hypothermic therapy.
Right.
So when a patient has a cardiac arrest, we try and preserve their brain cells and the rest of their organs, and so we basically freeze them down up to a certain temperature, a cold temperature, and give them about 24 hours of what we call brain rest. And then
Now, when they come back, have you ever, or has anybody ever in your presence, asked them what they saw?
They just say it's kind of like a light, but like you were describing earlier, I mean, they're in a hospital room and all they see are lights above them.
Right.
So it's kind of hard for them to say what they're actually like feeling. I've never heard of them saying like somebody was pulling me towards them or anything. They do describe that they do hear voices from time to time.
But that's because, again, they're in a room with a bunch of people yelling probably, right?
Yes.
I would think.
Exactly. Exactly. People yelling around them.
So no one's ever come to you with a story of, I saw my life flash before my eyes, or I looked like I was outside of my body looking down on, you know, looking down on the operation or anything like that. They just really talk about lights and noise.
They talk about lights and noise. For me personally, and I've been doing this for over 10 years, I haven't heard anybody saying anything.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, let's see if our listeners have had different experiences. Thank you, Jennifer. We very much appreciate you listening. Why don't we try, let's say John in Pasadena, shall we? He's on line four, up first on this, on the Kevin Devine Show.
Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
You died and came back.
Yes.
What killed you?
I was a drug overdose.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. All right. And then what happened?
Okay, so I was out for 5 minutes before the paramedics got there, and I understand what they're saying about the lights. You see a light, but it's not just a light. It's like energy. I saw it basically like every person has like an energy about them, and then your energy goes, and it's hard to explain. It's kind of like evened out or averaged out with everybody else's energy up there, and it's like perfect. It's like perfect harmony.
So you say up there? You're talking about heaven? You're talking about the sky?
Well, yeah, I'm not particularly religious, so I don't know if it's heaven. It's just it's whatever that is. It's just like where all the energy goes.
But you described it as perfect harmony, so it was a peaceful feeling to be dead.
Yeah, right. Like say, so, like you say, like you're like a negative three on the scale. You go up there and you're put into the rest of the energy, and you get like a three to average you out. So it's just the purpose feeling of, you know, like having everything taken care of, and you're just fitting perfectly.
That's good news. All right, let me ask you this, and I'm so glad you called. Did it look? You probably took some hard looks at yourself. What am I doing wrong with my life? I just overdosed on drugs. But beyond that, did it change you dying and realizing that every minute you had after that was kind of bonus time in your life? Did it change the way you lived?
Not like a super change, but you do have a more comfortable feeling knowing, you know, I don't fear death as much.
Right.
So still on the drugs?
Still on the drugs.
All good?
Still struggling.
All right. Well, good luck to you, my friend. Thank you so much for calling. Matthew and Renee and Daniel and Francine, please hang on. We definitely want to get to your calls. 1-800-520-1067. We'll take them right after this on K-Rock.
All right. Just ahead of Nirvana, let's take one call. We're talking about you died and came back to life. We're going to start with Renee in Fullerton. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks. So you died. How?
I was running a half marathon.
Sucker.
And I collapsed.
What the hell are you doing? You don't have a car? A bike? Can't get a ride?
I do, but I just do it for fun.
So you collapsed?
I collapsed. Apparently, what I was told, because I don't remember, my heart stopped. I collapsed. The medics came. I was dead for a few minutes, and they had to use the defibrillators to revive me and rush me to the hospital. I don't remember any of this.
You didn't see anything? You don't remember anything?
No. I just remember I was running. I started feeling tired. I told myself I was just going to close my eyes for a second, and then I woke up in the hospital.
Wow.
But you have nothing at all to add to our topic, which is what you saw and felt on the other side.
Well, he does. Well, what he has to add is he didn't see anything on the other side. And
for me, it was a similar experience. I've had surgery before, so I've gone under anesthesia, so it's kind of the experience I had. It just felt like somebody drugged me up, put me to sleep, and then I woke up.
So you didn't finish the race? I mean, quit a race.
But what I was told from my family was that was the first thing I asked when I woke up. Did I finish?
I have woken up and asked that question many times, by the way. Thank you, Renee. I've rarely seen Kevin as tickled as he was Friday with that story of the Navy pilot drawing a penis in the sky with his plane.
Just the fact that the U.S. Navy had to come out and apologize for that made me laugh.
We're going to talk about that coming up in about 10 minutes or so here on K-Rock. First, though, you died and came back to life. What was it like on the other side? That's what we're talking about at 1-800-520-1067. Surprisingly, a lot of our listeners have done that. None more so than Javesh, I want to say, on line two. He's in Laguna Hills, and it has happened to him on more than one occasion. Javesh, what are you doing with your life?
What's going wrong with you?
What am I doing with my life? That's a good question, Kevin and Bean, guys. A long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you die more than one time, it's on you, dude.
Yeah, I do suffer from some weird medical conditions, but I'll give you an example. I was riding my buddy's motorcycle down the 405 at 3 in the morning, kind of near Long Beach and Lakewood, and pulled over, something went wrong, and I accidentally left the choke on, and then I kind of started it up and had AAA come out, and you know they kind of adjusted it, but I was going underneath that runway at Long Beach Airport, and gave it a little gas, the bike took off. I couldn't control it, and it went into the wall that goes into the divider that's underneath the airport and the runway and the freeway. I remember the impact. I really do remember the impact. I remember flying. I still have my helmet from that day. I have a bunch of road rash, but I flew kind of into the median, right underneath the airport over there. This is back in 2009 or 10.
And I'd like to, if you don't mind, I'd just like to interrupt and get to the part where you're dead.
Right. We don't really need
all
of the backstory.
I was wearing shorts and a jacket. I think a jacket saved my life, but the shorts definitely went through a rush. I don't remember much after that except waking up covered in blood. I picked up the bike, sat it up. The AAA guy eventually showed up 10 minutes later and said, am I okay? I said, yes. Didn't realize that half flesh came out of me. And during that period of 10 minutes, all I really saw was not a white light, but kind of like a glowing effect. I don't remember breathing. Apparently, I had a major head injury.
Same.
My favorite movie is Flatliners, by the way, from the 80s.
That's right?
Yeah, but my first rated R movie ever, my cousin Seema in San Francisco.
All right.
Who was in that movie?
Don't ask him any more questions.
I know it's Kiefer Sutherland.
Don't ask him any more questions, Kevin. Javesh, yeah. I love you, and I am grateful that you finally called, but this head injury did more damage to you than you realize.
Oh, I know. I suffer from bipolar disorder. I've been bipolar since 15 years, but I've been treated and fine and control for the last 15.
So. When did it first?
Yeah, this is a manic episode.
Don't ask him any more questions. I wish we had more time to hear about your other death experiences, but we don't. I will listen to your podcast though when you tell us what it is. Thank you for the call. Let's move along. How about Daniel in Compton, line 5, up next on the Kevin DeBeach. You're talking about people who died and came back to life.
Hey, Daniel, when you died, were you wearing shorts?
Don't ask that kind of question.
Okay, sorry.
And where were you on the freeway with your motorcycle?
I was wearing flip-flops, and I fell, and yeah, it was a crazy night.
All right, what happened?
Yeah, I was 28. I had a stroke, and I don't remember I remember getting out of the house, but after that, I just remember riding the ambulance, and all I wanted to do was to breathe, and I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe at all.
Now, were you dead at that point? Did they tell you later that you were dead at that point, or no?
They told me that I was in a vegetative state, because they had to put me in a coma. Cause, my heart had stopped, everything. Okay. And they said that, the doctors had already given up. They were like, he's going to be either, if he comes back, he's going to be a complete vegetable. And had intubated me.
Wait, could you hear them saying that?
I don't remember much, but I do remember hearing weird things I'm an organ donor, and they kept insisting to them, telling them, if we have to move on from this, we could harvest his organs. That's the one thing that I always kept remembering, hearing little by little.
And you can't want to hear them talk about ripping out your organs while you're still alive.
You can't talk, and you're like, hey, I'm still here, everyone.
But just to speed it along, though, you don't remember anything from the other side.
I just remember drifting into darkness, and then insisting that when they were when I did come back, because I ripped out my my air hose, when they intubate you, and they my respirator,
right.
I had ripped it out, and that's when they finally realized that I am still alive and I was still there.
This guy's alive. How did he do that? Let's not bury him. All right, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
We have to take Drew, Bean. I know it could be a disaster. It could be this might be a bad decision.
What do we always say? Why take one call when you could take one call too many? Drew, welcome to the Kevin DeBeach Show. You died. Hey, what happened?
I died. The first time I died, I was in the hospital, and I have a bill for resuscitation for $1,465. So I did. I have proof that I died. And when I was on the other side, I can tell you that it felt like I was falling through darkness, and it was so cold that it was bone-chillingly cold, like a cold that I couldn't replicate if I wanted to.
What temperature would you guess if you had to?
Look, Drew's fine so far, Kevin. Don't derail him. All right, so you die, and it's super cold on the other side. Do you remember seeing or hearing anything?
You feel like you're falling. Okay. I didn't do something right when I was alive. It felt like I did something wrong.
Okay. And then when you came back, did you have any memories?
When I came back, I begged for blankets, as many as they could give me.
Because you were cold.
And I was cold. Uh-huh. And then guess what? My heart failed again because I was so cold. So I died a second time.
Wow.
And then when I came, the second time, it was the same thing. It felt like falling. And I came back. I'm like, I just was begging for warmth, basically. And
right, because you were cold.
I was cold. Uh-huh. I mean, who wouldn't be, right? You're dead. And the second time.
How you feeling, Kevin? How you feel about the topic about this call, this final call?
I feel great about it.
All right, Drew.
I feel great about it.
Drew, now you can do what that you weren't able to do before you died?
I can actually play the harmonica now. I came back and I can play the harmonica.
That's all I wanted him to say. Dude can play the harmonica now.
And I'm very good at it. I recorded songs and I kick ass.
Well, now I hope we all die, right?
I didn't realize that there was a bonus at the end. You get to play the harmonica after you die.
That's the only part I wanted to get to.
All right. Well, at least we got to it in a hurry. Thank you for the call, Drew, and thanks to all of our friends who died for listening to the Kevin DeBeach. All right, Kevin, I know how excited you are to get to this story. Go ahead.
A Navy pilot drew a penis in the sky. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Navy had to come out and apologize.
By the way, they talked to a cartoonist who said, I don't know what it is, but whenever you have to draw something, it's always a penis. That's what he says in his life and among other people that he knows. Like, if you're just doodling, hey, let's RIP Mike Catherwood, but remember him with his penis drawings?
Right?
He could not stop drawing penises. Some people are just attracted to that for some reason.
It's a shame he's gone, right?
I know. It's a shame. He's such a young, nice man, too. Yeah. Here's the report on what people saw in the skies over Washington on Friday.
A Navy pilot is being reprimanded for the art, if you can call it that, he drew over the skies of Okanogan County, Washington. We have to warn you before we pull these up, it might not be safe for work or kids, for that matter. Here we go. This is what many residents saw when they looked up at the sky after the pilot from Naval Air Station Whidbey Island flew by. What appears to be male genitalia. Obviously, some people living in the neighborhood were upset and reached out to the Naval Air Station. Navy officials responded. The Navy holds its air crew to the highest standards, and we find this absolutely unacceptable, of zero training value, and we are holding the crew accountable. The Federal Aviation Administration says because there was no safety risk, there is nothing they can do.
I mean, I feel like that was a pretty high-quality drawing.
I thought it was impressive,
right?
By the way. I really did.
Give that guy a bonus.
I love, by the way, how uncomfortable the news is. They won't say penis on TV for some reason. I mean, everybody knows the word penis, and everybody knows genitalia means the exact same thing. Why is genitalia better than penis?
I'm not positive that's the point here.
I know it's not the point, but I'm just curious by it. Anyway, we asked Dave if there's any way we could talk to anyone involved in the story, and believe it or not, he does have the U.S. Navy lieutenant who was behind the wheel in that plane drawing the penis in the sky. He is Lieutenant Colonel Michael Hunt.
I'm sorry?
Lieutenant Colonel Michael Hunt joins us on the...
You can call me Mike.
Well, I prefer not to if you don't mind.
Say my whole name.
Just Mike.
Just my Mike. Last name?
Hunt.
Right.
Hunt. Right.
So that would make me?
Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Hunt.
Yeah, that's right.
So are you flying a plane right now?
I am, sir, yeah.
Oh, you're doing an interview while you're in the sky.
I'm behind the wheel of my plane.
Right. Are they not called that?
A long time in the service, did you? Well, the wheel of my plane?
It's not.
I'm going to go through a drive-thru and get me a Coke.
There's no steering wheel in a plane.
Hey, can I tell you about the time I died?
Please don't.
Were you cold and or wearing shorts?
As a matter of fact.
Those were some great callers, weren't they, Lieutenant?
Yeah. I wanted to crash my plane listening to it.
I don't blame you.
Now, you're not the one that drew the penis, are you?
Yes, I am.
You're the same one, okay.
And it wasn't a penis, by the way.
What was it?
I was doing a sketch of Barbra Streisand.
What? Really? Because it didn't look anything like it.
I only got the nose and the eyes done.
Oh, and everybody just
has to finish.
So we just jumped to conclusions,
right,
on the earth.
Conclusions. You should have waited for the whole face to be sketched. All you saw was the nose and the eyes.
Right. I see.
I didn't get a chance to the mouth and the hair.
I see.
And the chin.
Do you find it hilarious that there were people who were offended on the ground by the drawing that you made in the sky?
Look, it's like looking at clouds. When you look up there, you see whatever you want to see. You know?
Right, sure.
If I'm drawing with my plane, mm-hmm. which, by the way, seems like an enormous waste of taxpayer money to go up in a plane just to draw in the sky.
I mean, it's training, though, right?
Right, I was training. I was doing maneuvers.
Sure.
And if you see a penis there, who am I to say otherwise? But that was certainly not my intent.
Not your intention. No. Okay, that's fine.
And my name again?
Lieutenant Colonel Michael Hunt.
Right. Or my call sign, Woody. You can go by Woody.
Are you drawing anything else, or are you not allowed to do that anymore in the sky?
I'm drawing right now. I'm drawing a companion piece to the penis.
How are you?
Oh.
It's, it looks like a how do I say this?
Taco?
Oh, I'm pulling G's. Oh, I'm pulling so many G's right now.
Come on. Lieutenant Colonel.
You're trained to... What is your pilot?
Shouldn't be happening.
You're getting it all over the wheel.
Damn, now I got to
things behind the wheel. Go to a car wash.
Talking week number 11 of the NFL with Andrew Siciliano coming up just after the top of the hour. It's Kevin and Bean Show at 5 minutes till 8.
What happened in the late game last night? Anybody see that? Anybody watch that game?
I didn't watch that late
game. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was just wondering if anybody knew what
didn't
the,
see that.
What happened on that game, the late game.
Was that Eagles Cowboys?
Sunday night. Yeah, that would be that game.
Yeah, Sunday night
game.
No.
Could have gone either way. There's no real way to tell, I
guess. It was 7-9 at the half.
And then it ended
up. And then it had been 37-9 at the end.
Oh, so you did see the end of it.
Oh, that's right. I was watching.
Heard about it.
Hung a big 30 burger on the Cowgirls.
I'm good with that.
Me too.
On the Cowgirls.
Ralph's here now. Time for a look at the Showbiz Beat.
Yes, I am. And here it is. We look at the top 10 movies at the box office on a Monday morning. Justice League debuted with a paltry $96 million. Huge disappointment.
That's crazy to me.
I know. It's crazy. We live in a world where $96 million is considered weak.
I will tell you that your man Kevin went to see it and enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked it.
Well, it's Kevin. Right? Right?
You say that like it's a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing or a good thing. It's just a thing. It's just a Kevin thing. That's all.
I enjoyed it.
It is the lowest grossing opening weekend for any DC comic book movie. So that's not good.
That's not ideal,
that's
I guess.
That's when it cost $300 million to make. Wonder debuted with $27 million. Pretty strong opening for a small family story. Thor Ragnarok was third. Daddy's Home, fourth. Murder on the Orient Express came in at number five. The Star debuted with $10 million, made it number six. A Bad Mom's Christmas, Lady Bird, Three Billboards, and Jigsaw were your top 10 movies at the box office. Ashanti was performing on stage in Honolulu on Saturday night. She was doing her regular show, which apparently includes an on-stage lap dance. She brings up several fellas from the audience, blindfolds them, ties them to a chair, and proceeds to perform while also grinding her voluminous buttocks on their penile region.
Go on.
Some would say crotch.
Some would say that, yes. And so while she was doing that, someone in the audience started to make it rain. Started just to shoot off a bunch of singles at her while she was performing. She did not appreciate that, and here's her response to that, sir.
Yo, I'm going to just stop throwing that money. I'm not a stripper, okay?
Well,
I mean,
if you're giving a guy a lap dance on stage,
right?
Aren't you kind of?
At least acting like
it. Right?
Right?
So he just got caught up. You're such a good actress that he got caught up in your performance, Ashanti.
And you get a little bonus cash at the end of the night.
Where's the victim? Where's the victim?
Right?
Is what
it's
I
her.
Ask.
The guy voluntarily is donating money to you. Take it.
Where's the victim? And shout out to my boy, Richard Lucy, who passed away.
Richard Lucy.
Yeah, passed away over the weekend. He's my guy. He's my boy.
That is.
Richard Lucy of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Oh.
Passed away, and they fulfilled his wishes. His grandson, Dominic, was able to make his grandfather's wishes come true when they buried him with not one, but two cheesesteaks. Put him in the casket and buried him. With his
in case he gets hungry?
In case he gets hungry in the afterlife, or maybe you need to bribe somebody at the Golden Gates, or the Pearly Gates, or the Golden Showers, or the Pearl Necklace. I don't know what do you get when you die.
Wow.
I was listening to some radio show, and I couldn't listen anymore. I had to turn it off, because they were talking all about what happens when you die, and I felt like I had a near-death experience trying to get through it. So I stopped listening, so I'm not sure what happens when you die.
Same.
But he took two cheesesteaks with him. Okay. Whiz without. Apparently, whiz without. No onions.
Is that a good one or is that a bad one?
That's a good one.
That's a good one, yeah.
So that's my boy Richard, who, not uncoincidentally, died of heart disease. I'm thinking probably a long lifetime diet of cheesesteaks, probably.
Ralph, you think that the fallout from being brain dead at one point is that you no longer are able to tell a capable story? Maybe that's just what happens.
I have no idea.
Get to the point where you're dead. I was wearing shorts.
It was...
That happened.
It was remarkable.
We were trying to move it along. We just weren't having much luck.
I just know there's a lot of conversation in the intercom suites right now. That's all I'm saying.
That's some bad choices.
There's some meetings going on. There's some conference calls.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Is it too late to back out? A lot of talk like that.
That kind of thing.
Today's... By the way, note for Muggs, if you don't mind, Ralph.
Uh-huh.
Urgent. I will exhume him to eat those.
Yeah!
I would not put it past Muggs at all. I could see him with a shovel.
Yep.
In late night, there in the cemetery.
What a waste! These are just going to go to waste.
Yummy.
For folks who weren't with us on Friday, Muggs was literally taking food out of the trash to eat.
Yes, he was.
So, there you go. By the way, after having eaten.
Oh, yeah. Don't get us wrong. He had already eaten. He didn't get any sandwich.
Right.
He had had two, I think, at that point when he was going for people's scraps in the garbage.
Yes.
And then proceeded to have one more after that, I think. Today's celebrity birthday is Ming-Na Wen. We love her so much.
We do.
Joel McHale also celebrating his birthday today. Davey Havoc from Dream Car and AFI. He's 42 today. And Future, rapper Future, is 34. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Browns! Whoa!
Right?
You guys suck.
Andrew Siciliano, host of the NFL Network's Up to the Minute and DirecTV's Red Zone channel, joins us every Monday to recap the weekend that was. We love giving Andrew a hard time as a Browns fan because every week is a new exercise in futility. And yesterday, you describe how bad it was yesterday, Andrew.
Well, it was snowing. Mm-hmm. For a little bit. So my brother,
in the factory of sadness.
My brother texted me in the morning. It was the one game he had chosen to go to this year and texted me in the morning. So this was a bad idea.
Uh-huh.
And good morning, guys. They lost. They're 0-10. And they lost to a better team that is now 7-3 in the Jaguars. If the playoffs were to end today, which with me, everybody, they do not end today.
Stop saying that.
Jacksonville would host a home playoff game for the first time since the 90s. Okay.
Your attention is on the wrong side of the ball. Right
They lost to a good team. They stayed in it, you know, 3-point game in the fourth quarter. But the interesting thing about this game is, and I don't know how long it had been, but it had been since the 60s. The Browns, and this is stupefying because they are a young, undisciplined team, did not have a single penalty called on them the entire day and lost. Do you know how hard it is to play, to watch, to officiate a football game and not have a single flag thrown on one of the teams?
Think
about that.
On both teams?
Just on the Browns.
So maybe they weren't playing.
When's the last time you saw a game? No, it was a 3-point game in the fourth quarter. They're playing their butts off.
Andrew, I haven't seen a single Seahawks play that hasn't had a penalty this season. So in a whole game, no, I can't imagine. But is that stat more surprising to you or the fact that they didn't reach the red zone one time in the entire game? That doesn't happen.
Well, they did score a touchdown. They had a 27-yard touchdown. So it's not as – they had some plays.
They were in the red zone for about 2 seconds.
Right. They ran through it with the football.
Right.
Right, and then got to the end zone, end. And they're 0-10.
Has there ever been, and we may have asked this before, has there ever been an NFL team that went unbeaten, that had no wins, the entire season?
The Detroit Lions.
Yeah, the Lions
did it not long ago. Detroit Lions once went 0-16, and the Browns looked as if last year they were going to threaten that record.
Right.
They won a game in December. They went
1-15.
This year, however, they are 0-10, and once again, we shall start going through our Rolodex for... Do people still have those?
No.
Numbers of players on that Lions team. Yeah.
All right.
Good times. Congratulations on your Browns.
Okay, that's how we started.
Now, so much action yesterday we want to run down with you here, Andrew. What went so horribly wrong with the Rams, who we've really started to enjoy in recent weeks?
And you should continue to enjoy them. This was the game of the week. These were two playoff teams. These were two teams that were 7-2. These were two teams meeting in the home of Super Bowl 52, right? No team has ever played a Super Bowl in its own building. The Vikings have a legitimate chance to do that now at 8-2. This was an NFC Championship game preview, if you will. And the Vikings were the home team, and the Vikings were the better team, and the Vikings had the better defense, and they shut down the Rams. And a little bit of a comeuppance for the Rams. However,
let me ask you this question.
Yes.
If they played again, would the same thing happen?
I think this is one of those games where if it were at home, maybe it would have been different. But listen, Minnesota was clearly the better team. Clearly the better team.
Early.
They shut down the run.
Yeah.
Goff did not beat him enough over the top. Look, we also had Cooper Kupp fumbling inside the five-yard line. It's a very different game if he goes in there. I think it's also a very different game if Aaron Donald isn't called for that love tap roughing the passer on Case Keenum inside the five that then a couple of plays later turns into the Adam Thielen touchdown. But this is a huge test this week because now you come home this week and you get the hottest team in the league not named the Eagles. You get the Saints, who have won eight in a row, who rallied from down 15 in the fourth quarter yesterday, who have a mind-blowingly good defense that nobody saw coming, granted, until the Redskins scored whatever on
them
last
week. So this weekend is when we find out what the Rams are made of.
Well, I think each week we kind of find out because this team is in totally uncharted territory, hasn't been here before. This group has not ever come close to being here before, so they have checked a lot of boxes. This one they lost. Now you come back home and prove that you are legit. If you lose to the Saints and you lose badly, which I don't think they will, then maybe you have to step back and reevaluate. But right now they would still, if the playoffs were to start today.
Right.
And they do or they do not?
They do not.
They do not.
For the record, would be hosting a home playoff.
How about Patriots Raiders?
Tom Brady is now the first quarterback in the history of the National Football League to throw for 300 yards in three different countries.
How many other
stat
quarterbacks
have department working chance, overtime there?
Well, had the chance to do that.
Only Ryan Fitzpatrick and who's the other one? I don't remember. A couple other quarterbacks have thrown multiple touchdowns in multiple countries, but Tom Brady has now won three games in three countries. And Bill Bell, look, they're remember how a couple of weeks ago we were sitting here saying, oh, the Patriots are in trouble. They can't stop anybody. And maybe this is the beginning of the end. And avocado ice cream isn't going to cure that entire roster, which is clearly devoid of talent in some places and made up by Brady's ability. They're fine. They're fine. And the AFC Championship game will likely once again come down to New England and Pittsburgh because Kansas City has fallen off the face of the earth. Denver, the season's over. Denver fired its offensive coordinator this morning.
Oh.
Mike McCoy is out, the former Charger head coach, out as Denver OC. You tell me a team that scares you in the AFC. It might be the Jaguars, except they have a quarterback that people don't trust across the road.
Okay. We got time for just a couple more with our friend Andrew Siciliano, as we do Mondays here on the Kevin and Bean Show. How bad is it for the Cowboys right now?
Oh, they're done.
They couldn't have been worse last night,
they're
right?
They're done. So last night was basically their season. They're 5-4 coming in. They get to 6-4. It's not about catching the Eagles because they were never going to catch the Eagles, even if they had beaten the Eagles last night. It was staying in the wild card race. Right. And they're still kind of in it. They're 5-5. They're not out of it, per se.
Right. But it feels like they are.
It feels like they're out of it because they got outscored 30-0 in the second half at home on national TV against a division rival.
Yeah.
I mean, they were dead men walking. But now they get the Chargers on Thanksgiving. And people think that the Chargers at what, 4-6 now? People think that the Chargers are going to just blow past the Chiefs in the AFC West. A lot of people think that the Chargers are somehow going to march into the playoffs. They're 4-6. They're certainly in it, and they've won 4 out of 6.
Right.
But
So it's possible.
I mean, yeah, math is possible. But I still think the Chiefs figure it out. But, I mean, that's a huge game for both of those two teams on Thanksgiving.
Can we talk about the Bills and their quarterback?
That went badly.
Why? How come the quarterback was a first-year player, correct?
In his first game. Start, Nathan Peterman.
Threw how many interceptions?
He threw 5 in one half.
Five interceptions.
He had four with 12:43 remaining. 5 tied a record for, yes, most picks in a half.
Oh.
Tied a record.
He's probably angry.
By the way, the all-time record for picks in a game was 8. The man is 94 years old. Bill, I can't remember his last name. Starts with an H. He played at SC, actually, and he lives here.
Okay.
I'm embarrassing myself. Anyway, so real quick. The Bills starting yesterday were in the playoffs. They were the 6th seed in the AFC. They haven't made the playoffs since 99. It is the longest drought of any team in the NFL. Buffalo fans, you mock Cleveland fans, have waited longer for a playoff game than any other fan base in the National Football League.
Is that right?
No kidding.
So their rookie head coach, who had rave reviews, now granted they had lost 2 in a row, but he was getting all the credit in the world for turning this team around, decided he had seen enough of their quarterback. and he was going to bench their quarterback. Now, most people thought they would move on from that quarterback next year regardless, but he decided right here and now, we are going to move on and hand the ball to a fifth-round rookie. Granted, you're in the playoffs,
right,
but you do it on the road against a good and improving Charger team, knowing that next week you have to go to Kansas City and knowing that you still have to play the Patriots twice.
But then the decision after two interceptions, and then after three
and then after four, and then after five.
At what point do you say, okay, this isn't working this game?
Halftime. So that's when he made the decision, and then afterwards he wouldn't even commit to going back to Tyrod, that was the incumbent,
right,
for next week. How do you fly back to Buffalo when you had this team playing its you-know-what's off for you? That's why you're in position to be in the postseason.
Right.
And then you hand the ball to Nathan Peterman. Might have a bright future.
Sure.
But he was a fifth-round rookie. There's a reason he was the eighth quarterback selected in the draft in April. Not the first or the second or even the seventh. The eighth. And they hand him the keys.
And by the way, even quarterbacks who go first a lot of times have trouble making it in the NFL.
Right. Some of them might be embarrassingly bad in their first start. But this team was hanging on to a playoff thread. And I mean, if he didn't lose the team, then God bless him.
Doesn't sound like great coaching.
It sounds like a very bad decision. Yeah. And then a guy that said afterwards, I don't regret the decision.
Oh.
I regret the result.
Well, once you get to week 12.
I don't know what that means.
Because the results are all that matters.
Oh, no. Yes. Well, it sounds like you're blaming the kid for the result. But I made the right call. It's
right,
your
exactly.
fault, Sonny.
That's Pete Carroll and that Super Bowl call. That's what that is. It was the right call, but it had a bad result. Once we get to week 12, where we are next week, I mean, every week is so important, and every game has such implications. It's getting exciting. It's like we're in the bottom of the seventh now, if it were a baseball analogy.
I think
right?
we're there now, yeah.
Yeah.
We're
very exciting.
Now.
Great stuff, Andrew, and great work as usual with DirecTV's Red Zone channel, and we'll see you back on the TV on the NFL Network's Up to the Minute, starting back with your work week tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
We love you. We appreciate you coming in. Go Browns.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
You too. Not going to lie. I'm very excited. A comedy all-star on the line. Over 10 years on Saturday Night Live. You've seen him for years on The Goldbergs. He's everybody's favorite cannibal on Brooklyn Nine-Nine this season. And he is the star of a new show on CBS All Access. What the hell is that? We'll find out when we talk to No Activity star Tim Meadows on the phone on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. How are you, Tim?
I'm great. How's it going?
Very good.
It's
thank you.
Wonderful to have you on. We have a lot of business to conduct with you, but I want to start with, I did not realize until looking over your IMDb today, that you were the athletic cone in the Coneheads movie back in the 90s. Congratulations.
Is that something that you remember personally, or you just realized that just now?
I think he just read it. I just read it right now, and I thought, how awesome is it to have that on a resume? Like, as an athletic cone, what do you even do? Were you a cone that moved around a lot, or what?
Well, if you were a true fan of the movie, you would know. No, I run on camera, and then I'm killed immediately. I'm eaten by some monster.
What a fantastic first job on television, though, or in a movie.
Yeah,
I guess.
It was my first movie role, and he wasn't a must. He wasn't an athletic cone. He was just a cone. But then when they saw me shirtless, they realized they had to rename the character.
I love it. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
You've done so many things, and it's so funny. You're just one of those guys, whether you're talking about, Comedy Bang Bang or Trainwreck or, you know, the pop star movie. I mean, you just are always in so many funny things, and that must just be such a blessing to you to have been able to work so much with so many different people over the years. It sounds like your career has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it has been. I know I've been lucky. I mean, I've been away from SNL for 17 years, and you know, for a short period of time, I thought that SNL would be the biggest thing that I had done, but I just continued to work, like, consistently. And I think, you know, people that have hired me for jobs, they see how hard I work, and they keep bringing me back. So I've done a bunch of stuff with Judd Apatow, who's one of my favorite directors, and with the Lonely Island guys and Chandler.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's fun. I'm surprised as anyone.
Well, we definitely are going to be introducing people who are going to be hearing about this the CBS All Access for the first time. You want to kind of explain, I'm sure you've had to say to a lot of people when they say, oh, man, this show you're in, No Activity, looks so funny, but where can I see it? What do you tell them?
Well, I tell them that ask their kids, first of all. Their kids will explain to them what a streaming service is. But, no, yeah, CBS has started a business sort of like Netflix or whatever, where they – but now they are producing original material for their streaming site. You can go to CBS Streaming and, you know, you can watch any CBS show that's on the air or that's been on the show in the past. And then just recently, they started doing newer original programming with the Star Trek TV show and the Good Wife spinoff. And I'm just lucky enough that we have the first sitcom that they've put on the streaming site.
And explain No Activity to people.
No Activity was a show that was in Australia. It was a short, you know, like over there they do a season of 6 episodes. But the show is basically about two cops sitting on a stakeout, sitting in their car, and the conversation and relationship between them while they're on this stakeout. And then the other characters, there's two characters that we are watching who are in a warehouse, and those are two crooks who's waiting on instructions from their boss, and that's played by Will Ferrell and Jesse Plemons.
Oh, just Will Ferrell and Jesse Plemons, that's all. Jeez.
Yeah, and then the dispatchers who we keep in touch with is Amy Sedaris. And so it's the relationship between the two people in the scene that you're in the scene with. And it's different because it's not like it's basically two people talking to each other for, mm-hmm. you know, and it's split up over a half an hour. And there's plot things that happen. The show moves forward. This is not two people just talking
right.
about their lives, but like there is a plot that is happening, and you sort of see it as the show goes on. You know,
that's interesting.
I'm really happy with doing it. It's like one of those. It was very hard work. We shot my portion of the series in about 5-6 days.
Wow!
And it was fun. Patrick Bramall who plays my partner. He created the show in Australia. It was fun working with him, and he has an American accent in the show. And then when we would cut cameras, he would go back into his Australian accent. And so it was, like, jarring for me because I would forget that he was, like, an Aussie.
Sure. And by the way, you mentioned Will Ferrell. Jake Johnson appears in the show, J.K. Simmons. I mean, just so many super – Jason Mantzoukas, who we had on not too long ago, is an awesome, hilarious guy. Are you spending almost all of the time on camera in this show sitting in a car?
Yes. The whole show is me sitting in the car.
And how's that feel for you as an actor spending hour after hour sitting in a car, Tim?
You know, it's like it was literally the hardest work I've ever done. And I mean that, you know, when you go, you complain, you know, to my kids that I'm tired from work today because I was sitting in the car all day.
Right.
You know, it really doesn't resonate with them. But, mentally it was kind of weird, you know, because – the only thing that would change, basically, was my tie. that's how I knew it was a new day, you know. But it was fun. We got to improvise a lot. The storylines are really funny.
Oh, that's great.
But I couldn't wait to get out of the car. Like, I couldn't wait. And then I would get out of the car at work and then stretch, go change my clothes, and then get in my car in L.A. and drive.
And sit in the freeway. And then sit in the car, exactly. Well, the show looks super, super funny. We've seen a couple of different trailers, and it's got a great cast, and it looks really, really funny. And this might be the introduction for a lot of people to CBS All Access. As Tim mentioned, by the way, you not only get to stream all the CBS shows, you get to stream football on CBS as well, but you also get the new shows that they're making, like the Star Trek All Access, and there's going to be a lot more to come. This one's called No Activity, and we are going to hook you up right now just because you happen to be listening to the radio. While we have Tim Meadows on as our guest, we're giving away a $50 CBS All Access gift card. In fact, we got a couple of them. You can call us right now at 1-800-520-1067 to get some free CBS All Access. You know, we worked for CBS Radio, Tim. We tried real hard to get freebies, and they said no to us. They're giving them all away instead.
Yeah, that's wild, man, because I don't even have they didn't give me a freebie.
Yeah, and they're very stingy with them, apparently. So it's apparently worth a lot. So call now, 1-800-520-1067. So happy to have you back on our TV/computer screens, Tim. You're one of our favorites, man. Good luck with the show, and you're welcome anytime on the Kevin and Bean Show, my friend.
Thank you so much, man. You so bet. Good talking to you guys.
Thank you. Bye now. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 8:53.
What about Ralph Garman and yet another look at the showbiz beat here for a Monday morning Kevin and Bean Show?
Because it is a Monday, we look at the top 10 movies at the box office. Justice League debuted with $96 million at the box office and was considered a disappointment to those involved. They were expecting more. Now, in fairness, $96 million may sound like a lot of money, but it is the lowest grossing of all the DC Universe movies so far. I think you have to go back to Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern to find a film that performed as poorly as Justice League. It cost $300 million to make, so you can see why they were a little anxious about how much money it made this weekend. 44% lower than Batman v Superman, which made $166 million in its first weekend. So.
But going into it, perspective,
a better movie.
Perspective.
Going into it, though, you would have risked that, right? You would have thought, okay, it's a huge movie with a lot of money, but with all of these stars working
sure,
together.
Sure, you got Wonder Woman back, yeah. You got Superman and Batman, you're introducing new heroes that are favorites of many comic book fans. You think this is a slam dunk?
Yeah, I would think so.
Wonder. Was, Woman? So no, just Wonder was second at the box office with $27 million. Thor Ragnarok was third. Daddy's Home 2, Murder on the Orient Express were the top five films. The Star debuted at number six. Bad Moms Christmas was seventh. Lady Bird, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and Jigsaw were your top 10 films at the box office this weekend.
I like all those people who went to see Jigsaw going, hey, it's time for a good Halloween movie.
Horror's forever, man.
Right?
Yeah. You don't know. Sad news, AC/DC co-founder Malcolm Young has passed away at the age of 64.
Ouch.
He had retired from the band because he was suffering from dementia, which led him to retire 3 years ago. And since, he's lost his life. So, that's sad news. He and his brother Angus Young were the two founders of that band, and he played rhythm guitar for many, many years until he finally left. A lot of people speaking out, talking about how he was an influence on them, including Eddie Van Halen. And others, but it was pretty terrific. Foo Fighters paid tribute to Malcolm Saturday night when they opened their show in Mexico with AC/DC's Let There Be Rock. Guns N' Roses also dedicated their concert in Sacramento on Saturday to Malcolm. And, of course, Axl Rose took over as the lead singer of AC/DC for a while there, but they never got to perform together. So,
did you see, you mentioned the Foo Fighters' performance, did you see Dave Grohl's statement about Malcolm Young over the weekend?
I did not, sir.
He said that when he was 11 years old, he and his friend went to see a midnight movie. And by the way, right there, that was a surprise to me, of the AC/DC concert rock movie. I think it was called Let There Be Rock, maybe. And he said that was the night he decided he was going to be a professional musician. It was that movie. Wow. It influenced him so much that he said from then on he wanted nothing to do, but because of Malcolm and Angus, he wanted to play guitar and committed his life to dedicating it to music. And I thought, how about that? How about changing the course of history?
And then Mel Tillis died too. Kevin, Mel Tillis.
Mel Tillis.
That's right.
Senator from Idaho.
No, country music legend, Mel Tillis.
Also,
Mel Tillis.
He stuttered?
He was a stutterer.
Wow.
Who never stuttered when he sang.
But stuttered all the time when he talked.
Yes.
Wow. That's weird.
It was a phenomenon that he himself was very open about and had a lot of fun with. But he turned his speech impediment into a 60-year career, more or less. Did not stutter when he sang.
Wow.
Had more than 60 albums. Country music's a way to mother effing
I'm
go,
sorry,
man.
You said 60.
Yes.
Is that what you meant?
You can just keep pumping out the crap and they keep buying it. Damn, country music good that way.
I think a lot of it wasn't crap, too. I think that's partly why he was invited to keep coming back.
Yeah, they were all magic. All 60 albums were real pieces of art.
I'm saying the guy wrote over 1,000 songs.
Right.
And he wrote lots of songs that you guys, even aren't country music fans, would know. Songs like Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town.
How does that go?
He was a
Sing a little that song for us so we know it.
Give us a
you
little.
Know,
I don't know the song.
I don't think I do, but just a little.
Just sing a little of it so we'll recognize it.
Oh, don't take your love to town. Come on, you guys know that song.
One more time for you. See if I remember.
In fact, the Killers even covered that song a couple of years ago.
Which
the band Cake covered that song.
Which song?
I almost had it.
Ruby, don't take your love to town. Yeah, I'm not going to sing it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say words.
Just a little more. You painted up your lips and rolled and curled your tinted hair. Boom, ba-doom, 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 ba-doom. You know that one. The Ruby, don't take your love to town. My point is, he wrote a lot of great songs, and it's sad that he died.
I swear to God, I've never heard that song.
I swear to God, you have.
That made me super happy.
So Bean's got one song.
Yep.
Out of 60 albums. This guy's a genius.
Nobody had dozens and dozens and dozens of country hits. Coca-Cola Cowboy and Send Me Down to Tucson and Southern Rain.
Coca-Cola Cowboy. That's what I'm talking about. You can just crank out some dumbass stuff like Coca-Cola Cowboy. And then boom, you got a hit.
It's a great song.
Country's the best.
You
can write anything and they will buy it.
It's not as easy as you think it is.
So there's just a bunch of suckers.
Look, there are a ton of terrible pop songs.
What a piece of cake.
There are a lot of bad songs in general.
And we don't go saying, oh, they're geniuses. All 60 albums from these people are wonderful.
I'm not saying they're all essential, okay? I'm just saying over the course of his career, the man wrote a lot of great songs, and he will be missed.
He was an actor, too, Kevin. You'll be happy to know, yes.
Okay.
He was in Cannonball Run 1 and 2, and Smokey and the Bandit 2. So despite his stutter, he was actually able to be an actor as well.
Bean, give us some of those lines from Smokey and the Bandit 2. I can't help you.
Sing a little Coca-Cola Cowboy
I'm
for
not going to sing.
I don't know that song. Maybe I do. Maybe I do. If I hear it, maybe I'll know it.
I'm not singing any more
songs. How does a country song not involve beer? How do you go Coca-Cola? Come on now. Give us a little something.
Phone. You say you're tired and alone. But it sounds like someone else is lying there.
There's a little Coca-Cola Cowboy for you.
Breaking out, we're getting a little static.
From the film Every Which Way But Loose, Ralph.
Oh, my Lord.
That's really bad this time.
Okay.
What?
You asked for it, by the way.
We asked for you to sing it.
Yeah, I can't do justice to Mr. Tillis. I'm sorry.
Today's celebrity birthdays, Ming-Na Wen is 54 years old today. That is unfreaking believable.
Yeah, it's not cool, actually.
She looks like she's about 32.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's unfair.
And so talented and so nice.
She's the best. Joel McHale's 46. He's not the best, but he's okay.
He's up there.
Yeah. Davey Havoc of Dream Car and AFI is 42 years old today, and Future's 34. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Come on, just a little more cowboys that drink Coke.
I'm not going to sing anymore.
A bar.
I can't do it justice.
A measure.
Hey, speaking of Linkin Park, I didn't see the American Music Awards last night. I was traveling. But they did a wonderful tribute to Chester Bennington last night, Kevin. I don't know if you saw it or heard about it. But Rob and Mike and Brad from Linkin Park came out and gave a magnificent speech and just talked about how much they have appreciated, you know, hearing from so many of the band's fans from over the years and how, you know, precious he was and how special he was and how happy they were that he was his friend and, you know, their friend and got to intersect with him. It was really, really nice. And I'm sure this is, you know, continues to be the worst year of their lives, but they are coming through it like champions. And Honor Chester was a great thing to see on the TV last night. It's up on YouTube if you want to check it out. But it was a very emotional moment. And it still occurs to me time, you know, I'll have forgotten about it for a while. And then all of a sudden it'll hit me again and I'll be like, oh, man. Still can't believe that.
Linkin Park fans are great.
They're great, yeah. And they sure loved Chester as well they should.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 941.
If I could walk on water.
Is that the...
It's not the same thing.
It's better.
You're singing the Eddie Money.
It's goddamn right I am.
That's what I thought.
Oh, yeah. So much better.
Remember when you came out with Eddie Money?
Remember when
fair?
I performed with Eddie Money?
Oh, that was, you killed
it. One of the highlights of my life, performing, sharing a stage with Eddie Money. We got on stage together and we performed and it was magical and everyone loved it.
Or,
that's the story and I'm sticking to it.
He forgot to wave you from the from
if
the side
I
of the
could
stage.
Walk on water.
And Ralph, you didn't get to sing
Ralph, if all. I could find some way tonight.
Ralph is standing on the side of the stage with a microphone and it was agreed to that he was going to come out and sing and Eddie Money forgot.
Forgot about him.
He was a busy man that night. He had a lot going on. He was doing a show. And he had other things on his mind. Not
so
the
this,
money man's fault.
This 30 Seconds to Mars Walk on Water song, different song. And
right.
And the new Eminem song, Walk on Water, also a different
correct.
Song.
Correct.
Right. But who did it first?
Well.
That's what I'm asking.
You're saying the Eddie Money
one. If I could walk on water.
Okay.
If I could find some way to prove,
yeah,
if I could walk on water, would you believe in me? My heart is so true.
For the showbiz beat, here's
na 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 na.
Ralph, moving on. Na 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 na.
I don't know why that happens.
Trouble with Ralph's mic, too.
Yeah, that's strange, right?
New owners. They're bad equipment.
They apparently don't want you on the air, right?
The old performers, the old owners, they never had that problem.
Right?
Hey, it's Monday, so we look at the top 10 movies at the box office. Here's what we do. Justice League, number one this weekend. $96 million made it number one. And that was a disappointment to all involved.
Rob, I enjoyed it.
$96 million. Disappointing.
I have a question that may, once again, as I so often do, point out my ignorance.
Man.
But there is an online petition right now with tens of thousands of people who are
director's
complaining
cut.
Complaining about the edit. Did they have a director for this movie and then fire him and then hire somebody else?
No, Zack Snyder had to leave the project when he lost his daughter.
Oh, right.
And so they brought in the man who gave us the Avengers, Joss Whedon, to step in and finish the film.
He seems like the right guy for a job like this?
Yes. By all accounts, he made it a lot more accessible and lighter and enjoyable and more heroic and more hopeful than the original version. But there's a lot of hardcore emo DC fans out there who worship at the altar of Zack Snyder who say he can do no wrong. And they want to see, I want to see my gritty, grim super heat friends that are really mad and really don't like each other. And there's not, they're really sad faces. I want that version. So they're demanding that version. Yeah,
that doesn't sound like emo. A better movie.
They want hobo Superman just walking around, being all glum, with his beard and his backpack. They like that. They like those kind of heroes. So they want that version.
Gotcha.
And I don't know. Maybe they'll do it. They'll probably do it. Look, if you can milk another couple bucks out of somebody from a DVD or a Blu-ray, why don't you release it? Right?
Sure.
Wonder was second at the box office with $27 million. Thor Ragnarok was third. Daddy's Home 2 came in at number four. Murder on the Orient Express was fifth. The Star, animated Christmas movie, debuted at number six. Bad Moms, Christmas, Lady Bird, Three Billboards, and Jigsaw, rounding out your top 10 movies at the box office. Nick Nolte's getting his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame today at 11:30 a.m. Go down there and give Nick some love. I've been doing this a long time. And it's just so great to see all these people come out here just to support me.
You get a lot of call for that.
I don't get a chance to a lot of Nick Nolte. But Kevin Smith claims my Nick Nolte is my Beetlejuice. And it's just not true. Because one is, hey, how's it going? That's Beetlejuice. And then Nick Nolte talks like somebody's strangling him. And he's just barely getting the words out.
Now, is there a little Doug Kriegel in your Nick Nolte?
No.
Let me hear some Doug Kriegel now.
Doug Kriegel, Doug.
That's a fine line you walk.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's a game of inches.
They're all in the same family.
It's a game of inches. That's same Kevin Smith who claims that my Ray Romano is my Robin Leach is my Kermit the Frog. And it's just simply not the case.
Well, do we need to hear all three?
Champagne wishes and caviar dreams. I'm Robin Leach.
All right, Robin Leach.
Very
yes.
Robin Leachy.
Sure. Very Robin Leachy, right?
Hi, ho, Kermit the Frog here.
Oh, and that's an excellent Kermit.
Hey, look. Yay! Yeah, Fozzie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very different and perfect.
No doubt. No, Deborah. No, it's just Mom. They keep coming here. Kids. Parents. Comedy.
It's tough to do, Ray.
It is.
Smith is trolling you, man, if he's complaining.
I know. Coming at me. It's all right. Slap him down. He got me a birthday cake for Hollywood Babylon Friday in the shape of a giant penis.
Saw that, and you were looking at it longingly.
And I was saying, all right, how do I... If I reject this outright, then I'm a bad sport.
Right.
If I eat this, the pictures will haunt me forever.
Right.
But I opted for comedy, and so I did eat the giant penis cake, because you got to give the people what they want sometimes.
Sure, right? And that's what they want.
Sometimes they
want
to watch you eat a giant penis
cake.
Well, I'll tell you guys that, right? Hey, how's it going? Beetlejuice. Today's celebrity birthdays. Ming-Na Wen is 54 years old today. Joel McHale celebrates his 46th birthday. Davey Havoc, lead singer of Dream Car, How good were they at acoustic at Weenie Rose?
Weenie Rose, great.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yep.
All of his bands are great.
Yep.
His Black Audio is great. His AFI is great. They're all great. Yeah. 42 years old today and future 34 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph. SoCal Helpful Honda dealers are handing out random acts of help with us.
I love Hondas. They're so helpful, those guys.
And we all win with a commercial-free drive home today at 5 p.m. tomorrow morning. We've got your Anaheim Ducks tickets. We've got a brand-new Kevin and Bean Internet Roundup, and comedian Brad Williams joins us as well.